How'd you like the intro?
It's actually kind of a really good segue because that's the Chicago Bulls intro song, right? So this ties in directly to this episode. So this was 2022, I think. Jay and I were in Chicago for work. Jay's from Chicago. And I decided
that's why I chose the song, by the way.
Yeah. I decided I would spring for a surprise for Jay because he'd never been to a basketball game. So I bought courtside tickets to the Chicago Bulls game. So we sat courtside and we were sitting down there. And like when you sit courtside, you get little menus where you can like order food and drinks and they'll like bring it to you. So Jay ordered a couple drinks and I was just like, dude, I wonder what this bill's going to be. Cause there was no prices on the menu. I'm just like, oh my God. How like, what like, is the bill? I'm
$100 or $1,000.
Yeah. No idea.
Yeah.
Turns out it's all free when you sit courtside.
Oh, wow. Nice.
Yeah. Yep. So that's why you see all those people like drinking all the time courtside. Cause it's free. They just like, you get it comp cause you pay so much money for the tickets.
Right. Yeah. So what would you have done if they're like, okay, here's your bill and it's $1,500. Are you going to just die?
You
ditch?
Pay it. Like, what are you going to do?
No, I know. I can imagine that, like, I can just imagine your face, like at that moment, be like, what, how did this, like, what'd you guys have? If you remember that far back.
Well, I didn't drink at all. But Jay had, Jack and Diets. That's his drink of choice.
Yeah. No food? He didn't. You guys didn't.
He got a couple hot dogs.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Sweet.
I was there for the basketball. I didn't want to have to like take a pee break.
Did they? I don't think they use this intro. That intro music, by the way. Did they do that for your game? As far as I knew, that was like a '90s Michael Jordan Bull, you know, era.
Oh, I can't remember. I don't think they did.
Did they win?
Because
that was when they weren't very good, right? Like, I don't think they were all that good of a team back when you guys went.
I can't remember if they won or not. I think they did.
Okay, yeah. I remember you guys, hearing that you guys went there. But that is actually a pretty good segue because we're talking about drinks, and that happens to be the topic. And what's kind of funny about this is, like, neither you nor I are, like, big drinkers. I'll have a drink if I go out with friends or something, like we're going out to dinner, I'll get like a beer with it. And maybe a second beer if I'm feeling wild. But other than that, I just don't drink much. So I don't know that there's two guys who are less qualified to talk about drinking from a social aspect, but
an experience standpoint.
Yeah, exactly. But you can certainly, we'll be able to speak on it, at least in terms of a nutritional aspect. And there's a lot to learn here. And people want to know, like, how do I fit alcohol into my diet? Can I have drinks and all that? So we'll go into that. And I do want to specify one thing. I have to apologize to people who heard who watched last week or listened to the podcast, because last week I said we had a special guest on, and unfortunately he could not make it today. So we are going to shoot for next week instead. So just pivoting here, it'll still be just me and Brad, but I do have some questions that I'm going to ask you that are.
You might need to reset your mic real quick because it sounds really weird.
Hold, please.
I can't hear you at all now. You might have to jump out and jump back in. Thank you guys for bearing with us with this technical difficulty.
Can you hear me now?
That's better.
Okay. Sorry, guys. So we'll get on with it. But what I was saying is I have some questions for you that I'm going to be asking you. These were originally intended for you and our other guest. I'll just direct them at you. We'll see how you do. But before we get to that point, let's dive into it. Alcohol, we'll talk about the good, the bad, how to handle it. And then this episode is really for anyone who does enjoy drinking. And even if you're someone who has an occasional drink and you want to go out and just, you know, have a night with your friends, we'll hopefully informing you on how to fit those things in and how to account for it and all that. So alcohol is, I think most people are surprised to hear that we call it the fourth macronutrient. And I think we kind of, I mean, we kind of say that tongue in cheek, but it is considered the fourth macro. It's not, you still need to track it, right? There are about 7 calories per gram of alcohol versus carbs and protein have 4, fat has 9 per gram. So it definitely has calories in it and you still want to account for it. But I think people are sort of surprised to hear that. So let's just first, like we usually do, dive into the nutritional side of things. What is alcohol exactly? From a nutritional standpoint, scientific, however you want to draw it up, what is alcohol?
How technical do you want to get?
So let's talk about ethanol. Like, as far as how technical.
Yeah, I mean,
when it enters your body, let's go into like what does it do? Like, what is it and what does it do inside your body?
So alcohol is actually just describes like a larger group of compounds. And so there's like different types of alcohol. Like there's like ethanol, methanol, propanol, isopropanol. Like they're all different forms of alcohol. And the one that we consume as humans is ethanol. And really, we call it a macronutrient because it fits the criteria of the other macronutrients, meaning that it provides energy for our body, whereas carbohydrates and proteins are 4 calories per gram and fats are 9. Alcohol is about 7 calories per gram. So we actually do get energy from alcohol. Now, the way it's different is it provides no nutritive value. And we don't have any way to store it. And it effectively functions as a toxin in our body. So when we consume it, our body sort of prioritizes alcohol metabolism. So it's not like we stop metabolizing everything else. We just metabolize fats and carbohydrates to a lesser degree and start to utilize the same metabolic pathways to really metabolize alcohol. And then alcohol gets broken down into like other smaller chemicals, and then our body processes it out.
And we'll probably get to this in a little bit, but basically alcohol is not supposed to be in your body. So when you consume it, true or false, the body tries, like, it takes precedence over everything else to get the alcohol out. So it blunts,
yeah, it's
beta oxidation and muscle building and all that.
Yeah, that's true, but it's not like it doesn't go from 100 to 0 or 0 to 100. It's like, hey, your fatty acid oxidation will go down a little bit and your alcohol metabolism will increase.
Okay. So ethanol is, yeah. So ethanol is the one that we consume. And when you talk about, like, well, let's piggyback off that real quick. If I want to build muscle and I'm going to the gym regularly and I'm, you know, I've got a good routine going and I have a good session, and then later that day I have a bunch of drinks, what is that going to do to my ability to build muscle, given that alcohol is now in my system and the body needs to try to get it out? So let's dive further into that. What actually happens there?
So alcohol reduces muscle protein synthesis, so the recovery process of exercise, in an almost like dose response fashion. So like one drink blunts it a little bit, two drinks a little bit more, three drinks a little bit more, up until there's probably a, like, that effect probably flattens out at the end, but we don't really have a good idea of what that is because we don't just take people into the lab and have them exercise and then give them 20 drinks. Like, we just don't know. But
right,
it definitely impairs your recovery capacity. And it also impairs like your sleep and a lot of other things related to recovery that are not just associated with muscle protein synthesis, but also like hydration, getting rehydrated, et cetera.
Have you ever been hungover?
Yes.
Is it not just the most awful thing ever? Don't you feel like Why did I do this? Why did anyone think this was a good idea?
Every time.
Because you talk about sleep. I'm like, well, I remember back in my younger days, it only happened to me a couple times where I really got really, really drunk. And I remember sleeping like a baby, but the next day it was like, just not worth it. So it affects your hydration. Does it, when we're drinking, it feel like we hear that like you can get really thirsty or you're dehydrated when you drink a lot of alcohol. Is that because, like, why is that? Does that somehow, for lack of a better term, sucks out the water? Or like, I can't imagine that's it. There must be something else going on. Like, why do we become dehydrated when consuming alcohol?
Well, some of it is that it like increases urination, so you pee out more body water.
Okay, sure. You just
You know, it also just like it impacts a little bit of like your water balance system in your body. So like sodium, potassium balance, stuff like that.
And okay. Yeah, I guess that makes sense. Okay. We'll come back to that. So we can, I think it's actually worth diving into how do I track it? How do I account for it? And I don't know where you stand. You might say there's no difference, but generally I think it's easier to take it out of carbohydrates. Some people take it out of fats. Some people take it out of a combination of both. But essentially, if you've got, this is the way I would do it. If you've got a drink that's, let's say, 100 calories, I would just say, okay, that's 25 grams worth of carbohydrates. It's simple enough for me. It's mostly alcohol, but I'm just going to say, okay, I drank 100 calories worth of drink XYZ or whatever you want to call it. And therefore, I'll just reduce my carbs by 25. Because for anybody wondering, 25 times 4 is 100. There's 4 calories per gram of carbohydrates. So that's why 25. So is that, I mean, how would you do it the same? Or would you say just carbs, fats, both, doesn't matter?
I mean, it doesn't really matter. But what I would tell people is either do it 50-50. Or do it from the macronutrient you feel like you have the most of. So like if you're eating 400 grams of carbohydrates a day because you're training a lot and your calorie intake is relatively high, like, yeah, take it from carbohydrates. But if you're like on a low carb diet and you're eating 60 grams of carbohydrates a day and you're still training and going to the gym, and then you have, you know, a glass of wine and you have, let's call it 120 calories of alcohol from the wine, like, I don't want you to take 30, so half of your daily carbs out. Like, take it from the fats. So it's a little bit of just like pick and choose. Yeah,
that's fair. So I did want to circle back to the muscle growth thing. So does that prevent muscle growth? It sounds like from what you were saying earlier, it wouldn't necessarily prevent it, but it can impede, is what you're saying. Especially like the more you drink, like you're not going to build as much muscle drinking as you would if you weren't drinking. Is that kind of what it boils down to?
Yeah. It's like trying to drive with your foot on the brake.
Yeah, that doesn't.
It's like having the gas and the brake, or trying to drive with your emergency brake, and you're like, what is this?
Whereas, since we're using car analogies, when you drink coffee in the morning and you're consuming caffeine, that's more like you're in a supercar, you've got the brake push and you're in launch mode and you're about to just launch it.
Sure. Yep.
Sure. So does it prevent, on the flip side of that, talk about building muscle, what about fat loss? Does it prevent weight loss / fat loss? And if so, how? Or is it kind of more of the same where it won't prevent it, but it will impede it? And I guess as long as you're in a calorie deficit, to me, it would make sense that you would still lose weight regardless of how much. Right. But how does it?
Fat loss? So like if you get in the most technical discussion possible, consuming a moderate amount of alcohol in the context of a calorie deficit, it's probably going to affect like nutrient partitioning a little bit. And so you may lose a little bit less body fat and may lose a little bit more lean mass than you would if you're not drinking at all. But it's going to be a very like marginal difference at the end of the day. Now, here's where it actually affects people. If you've had 2, 3, 4 drinks, how does that impact your overall decision making around food and what you're eating? You go out to a restaurant and your intention is to order the grilled chicken, a side of vegetables, and some white rice, and you start with 4 old fashions and it's time to order dinner, like, what are you going to order?
Yeah, I mean, are you going to order or are you going to be on the floor by that point?
I mean, you're probably going to order the burger and fries. And then you think, like, okay, if you go out to the bar and you're drinking, you usually don't just go home and go to bed. You usually stop and get pizza on your way home. Like, you just have to think about
Taco Bell, right?
The biggest effect that alcohol has on most people for weight loss is it affects the decisions you make around food more so than the 20, 30, 40 grams of alcohol and those calories directly impact weight loss. Like, that is,
yeah,
in practice, what happens to most people.
So what, gosh, that just brings, I mean, I can, this is so bad. Like, I remember some of my younger days when we'd, cause I don't know where the bar went, what time the bars closed, where you're at, but here there was like two.
I've never shut down a bar, so I have no idea.
I didn't do it often, but when we did, it'd be like 2 a.m. and we'd be hungry. And where would we go? What was the pizza. Only place open? Well, no, not,
or the
not,
diner.
Not on, it was Taco Bell. So like we'd roll through the taco. Yeah. I'm not proud of it. Like, I think back to smashing an entire whatever gordita at 2 a.m. and then going to bed. I'm like, that just sounds awful. But that's what we did.
Think about the combo of cheap booze and Taco Bell on your GI tract in your mid-30s.
I would die. Taco Bell in your mid-30s, I think, probably already is not a good thing for your GI tract.
When I owned the car company and we had the like detail wrap shop, I would walk in like during the middle of the day to like go check on stuff. And these guys would be like coming back from lunch and they would have like 30 Taco Bell tacos in a bag. And I'm just like, oh my God.
Yeah. When I think about some of my eating habits back when I was that, and again, like when you're that young, I didn't really think anything of it. Like you could just handle it. And it's just what you did.
God, being young is great.
Things so definitely change. I mean, you also work with, kids, the Gonzaga dudes. I'm sure those dudes just eat. I mean, I'm sure you've seen them eat junk and they just like, and they're just like freak athletes still, right? Like, man, to be young again. All right. So one of the questions I put this on here, cause people do ask this a lot in our group. And that is, what should I order? Like, what's the best drink to order if I want, like, I'm going out tonight. I want to stay on track. What should I order? And I don't know what your recommendation is, but I typically say, something like, I mean, a Jack and Diet is relatively lower. If you're going for like low calories, right? Like a diet doesn't have any calories in it. And then just like some sort of spirit or, you know, something like that. So if you enjoy that sort of thing, that's what I'd recommend. But I think just trying to stay on the lower calories. I mean, that's calorie wise, that's definitely much lower than a margarita, for example, which is loaded with sugar. So,
what's wild to me is like the calorie range of drinks. Like if you order a Long Island iced tea, you're pushing like 700 calories a drink. If you order a vodka soda with lime, you're like 70 to 100 calories a drink. So, I mean, let's just say you're on vacation and you spend a day at the pool and you have 4 drinks over the course of the day. Like that's the difference between 3,000 calories, 2,800 calories in drinks versus 400 calories in drinks. Like now, if you're on vacation for 7 days, that's 21,000 calories from drinks or 2,800 calories from drinks. Like that's a big difference.
100%. That's why I said in the group the other day that just because you didn't eat a lot of food doesn't mean you didn't consume a lot of calories. Like there are very easy ways to consume a lot of calories, and certainly drinking is one of them. the one that comes to mind, you mentioned vacay. I mean, like, think about people just sipping on like strawberry daiquiris all day. It's basically a jar of a cup of sugar. Like, so very easy to get calories in, but whatever, it's vacation. So, but yeah, I what would be your drink of choice if you were to go out for a night and you want to be conscious? What would you actually choose personally?
Probably just like a glass of bourbon or scotch neat.
Just neat. That's
Yeah.
fair.
But
So I have, this is where I was going to ask some questions to you and our mystery guest, but since they're not here, I will ask you. But real quick, we did get, it doesn't look like they're questions, but Holly says 1,000% it's Taco Bell. So Holly knew what I was talking about. Holly's been to Post Bar, Taco
the
Bell drive-thru.
TV,
She
as
knows
they
she.
say.
Yeah, and then she said vodka, water, and Crystal Light. Yeah,
That's actually a pretty common thing.
Crystal Light's good, and I don't know if that means like I'm old for thinking that, but it's pretty underrated. So here are the questions. Are you ready?
Yes.
Well, first
Just
of all, what is your actual drink of choice? Not like, or would you still say it's bourbon?
probably like a glass of wine at this point in my life.
Wine, red or white? I like red.
Winter red, summer white.
White, okay.
Like at the
So,
lake in the
yeah.
summer.
I'll have to pick up a bottle of white wine then when I head out there in July or whatever, and we'll pop it together, and we'll just, well, I guess that's champagne, but I don't know. You could drink champagne. I don't know. You a champagne guy?
So before we get back to some of the like hard science about alcohol, here's a funny story for you. So when I first met my wife, she was working night shift in the ER, and her schedule like rotated all the time, but she always had Thursday off every week. So Thursday night was just like date night every week, and we would call it Champagne Thursdays. And a lot of times it was just like she would just come over to my house for dinner or whatever, or I would go over to her house and we'd hang out. Because just like schedules with her going to work and stuff was a little bit crazy. So instead of me like just going to the grocery store and having to pick one up every week, I went to the like Total Wine here in Spokane and just ordered like 6 cases of the like $3.99 a bottle Andre champagne. And so we had an entire closet full of like $4 a bottle champagne in my house for like 3 years. It was hilarious.
That's pretty good.
I went to go
And they
pick it up,
lasted a
and the
while.
guy was like, "Oh, are you having like a party?" And I was like, "Nope."
Yeah, for the next 4 years, I am.
Yeah.
Okay. I do
So,
have some questions. Are you ready for them? Or go
sure.
ahead if you want to mention something. No,
No,
if you got something, go ahead.
we can go into questions.
Okay. I'm curious to see how you'll do. When did humans first start drinking alcohol?
About 9,000 years ago.
You're pretty damn close. Around 10,000 to 12,000 years ago, during the what period do they call that? Let's test your knowledge there. The blank period.
I don't know.
The Neolithic period.
Yeah,
Likely co
the paper that I remember was one that was 9,000-year-old evidence from China. That's what I have
Oh,
on my
okay.
notes.
This yeah, the note that I have here is this likely coincides with the beginning of agriculture and grain storage. So kind of makes sense. What is the first evidence of alcoholic drinks? You kind of already alluded to that, but I have some specifics on it. But what's the very first evidence?
Beer.
Says the oldest archaeological evidence of fermented beverages comes from China around 7,000 BCE in the form of rice, honey, and fruit-based drinks found in pottery jars. So people were getting messed up 7,000 years ago on this stuff.
There's like a
Okay.
whole thread of like study about like psychedelics and booze and
Oh
like the
yeah.
evolution of humanity. That's really interesting.
How do you think the first person, like, I would have to imagine the first person to like actually get drunk probably ate some fermented fruit, wouldn't you think?
Probably.
Like, oh, I'll try to eat this. Oh my gosh, like I feel dizzy. Like, what is this? Like, probably, that had to be it. So, next question is, when was beer first invented?
Oh, my guess would be in like the Mesopotamia area where they first had agriculture. So probably like, what is that, 5000 BCE in the Middle East?
Once again, you're pretty close again. Around 3400 BCE in ancient Mesopotamia, where Sumerians brewed a beer-like beverage from barley. The hymn to Ninkasi, a Sumerian poem, even serves as an ancient beer recipe. So
there's a brewery in Eugene, Oregon called Ninkasi.
What is Ninkasi?
I don't know. You just said it. I don't know.
Well,
I don't know.
I was hoping you would know. These are your questions.
Don't ask hard questions. I don't know.
When was wine first invented?
2000 BC, Greece.
This one is, you're further off on this one. I was actually surprised by this answer. The earliest confirmed evidence of winemaking dates to 6000 BCE in the South Caucasus region, modern day Georgia, where archaeologists found wine residue in clay jars. So there you go, 6000 BCE. Yep.
That's wild.
What's the world's strongest beverage by alcohol percentage?
Everclear.
Do you know the ABV?
I think it's 99.5.
Yeah, 95% ABV. That's insane. Oh,
okay.
What country consumes the most alcohol per capita? I wouldn't expect you to know this, but if you were to guess.
It's going to be an Eastern Bloc country.
You are on the right track. Yep.
I want to say Poland.
It's the Czech Republic.
Ah, I was close.
Right. Yep. As of the most recent WHO data, especially beer. Apparently, they consume a lot of beer in the Czech Republic. What was your rationale for saying that? Like, I'm curious to, because
just culture and
just
then
the culture.
Yeah, like also places that have longer winters tend to drink more booze.
That's a good point. Yeah. Just a few questions left. How many standard drinks does the U.S. define as moderate per day for?
For men or women?
For women.
I think it's one or one and a half.
One drink per day.
Men is two.
Yeah, that's, I don't know. I mean, I think my opinion / perspective is skewed because I feel like two a day would really crush me. What is the name of the chemical in alcohol that causes hangovers?
It is acetaldehyde.
Damn it, Brad. You're not supposed to be this good. Yes, acetaldehyde, a toxic byproduct of ethanol metabolism. So that's interesting. So we get, that part I didn't know. So we actually get the hangover because of the how our body is metabolizing the ethanol to get it out.
Yeah, I mean, it's a little more complicated than that. Like, hangovers include the acetaldehyde, but it's also like you're dehydrated. Sometimes you're hypoglycemic. Your sleep is impaired.
Yeah.
Stuff like that.
So there's more to it than just that. That's interesting though.
So if we want to go a little bit deeper into some of the like technical parts of alcohol, I think we can. So what most people don't think about is how alcohol actually like gets absorbed and processed through your body. So it actually starts in your mouth because alcohol is basically like diffusible across membranes. And so you actually get about 1% of all alcohol you consume enters your bloodstream through your tongue. And then you get about 20% of it is actually absorbed directly through the lining of your stomach into the blood vessels that feed your stomach. And then the other 80% is from your intestines. And the reason for that is it's simply to do with surface area. Like the small intestines have substantially more surface area to absorb alcohol than the stomach does.
Right.
And so if we put this into perspective, like the average stomach has a surface area of about 500 centimeters squared. Now your intestines have all those little like villi, which massively increases the surface area. What do you think? So if the stomach has 500 square centimeters or centimeter squared of surface area, what do you think the intestine is? Small intestine.
I mean, if you, man, that's, it's gotta be a lot, because if you were to lay out an intestine from end to end, like it stretches a long way. So I don't even know. Wait, so the stomach you said was how much?
It's 500 centimeters squared.
I mean, it's got to be like 100 times that.
250 to 400 square meters. So 500 to 800 times more surface area.
God, that's crazy. I mean, I knew it was a ton. Wow, that's wild.
And so another interesting piece is like when you consume alcohol, how your body processes it actually has like basically two phases. Your blood alcohol content drops initially because of diffusion. So the alcohol in your blood just like diffuses out into all your organs and all your like interstitial tissue. And then it starts getting metabolized enzymatically by your liver.
And I wonder,
go ahead.
Well, because you mentioned liver, and that's what, I mean, people that drink heavily can end up with like hepatitis, for example, right? Because is that
cirrhosis,
just because of how much your liver. Yeah, right. Because of how much your liver actually has to try to metabolize that. So it just it's hard on it.
And it's toxic. Like it's
right.
So it actually causes damage to your liver while it's processing it. Now in small amounts, your liver can recover from the damage, but in large amounts it can't. So this is actually one of the reasons why the larger you are, the less you're affected by a single drink, is because if you have more surface area for your body to diffuse the alcohol out of your blood into your your tissue. And so if we think about like the main alcohol that we drink is ethanol, but there are other ones like methanol and like isopropyl alcohol, right? Which we use in like the lab to disinfect stuff.
Yeah.
Now, this is really interesting. Methanol, if you consume methanol, is highly poisonous, because when it gets broken down, instead of like alcohol where it gets broken down into acetaldehyde and something else, I can't remember the exact name, but like your body can process acetaldehyde. Your body doesn't process the metabolites of methanol, so it's highly poisonous. So do you know what the cure for methanol poisoning is?
Is it to actually drink more alcohol?
It's ethanol. So if you and this happens in like big industrial places where you're using methanol for like engines, if it like a pipe breaks and you get methanol in your mouth, they just give you usually IV ethanol because it competes for the same enzymes. So your body just pees out the whole methanol before it gets metabolized. So they basically have to keep you drunk for a few days.
Wow. That's wild.
Yeah.
I know someone who would probably enjoy that. I won't name names though.
Okay. So the other piece is, you know, outside of body size, there's different factors that affect how people are affected by alcohol. So one of them is like biological sex. So generally speaking, women tend to be more easily affected by the same amount of alcohol as men. And it has to do with total body size. Generally, men have larger body mass than women. They have more fat-free mass than women. And there are changes in water. So women and men actually have different water content in their bodies. So that's one thing that affects it. The other one is genetic makeup, primarily determined by like race/ethnicity and the genotype we have. So we actually have different genetic variants in the enzymes that break down alcohol. So it's called the alcohol dehydrogenase gene. And different people have like different enzyme like isoforms, and it affects how much we impact alcohol. So there is a genetic component to it as well.
I assume if we were technologically advanced enough to modify DNA a certain way, well, I know we can modify DNA, but like if you, like it would be possible to modify an organism's DNA to like basically subsist solely on ethanol, like as the thing to metabolize. Is that Could that theoretically happen?
I mean, I guess. I think there's, I'm sure there are, I'm sure there's like yeast or some microbes that feast on alcohol. We could probably look it up.
I mean, this is just my brain being weird and going off on tangents, but like just a thought that popped in my head, because I figure if it's gene related, then that means like you might be able to alter that gene. I don't know. I do, while you're, if you're looking that up, I have one more question and then we can get to the other stuff. But which U.S. constitutional amendment started prohibition? It's the 18th.
I was going to say it's either the 18th ended, or the 21st.
Yeah, the 21st ended prohibition. So that's all the questions I have. Holly says, can we... Yeah, you can absolutely ask questions on this one, Holly. She says, can we ask questions on this one? If yes, why does it seem like different liquors give different hangovers or even drunk feelings, like vodka versus tequila versus rum versus whiskey? Is there a scientific reason? Which actually, that's a really good question, because you and I talked about wine earlier. I used to swear that, and I'd only gotten drunk on wine a couple times, but like it felt like a much different type of drunk. Like I felt much warmer and much more flush. And so I don't know if that's because of the tannins in wine or the other contents, but do we know the answer to that one, Brad? Is there a difference there?
I'm going to just put this out there. This is not my area of expertise, so this may not be 100% correct. So please fact check me. I think it's related to two primary things. One is related to the like other molecules that are in the different types of alcohol you consume. So like when you consume wine, there's obviously like the sulfites and the tannins and things like that.
Yeah.
When you consume whiskey, there's all of the other like volatile chemicals that give it its flavor, its smell, its color. Vodka is like pretty purified in terms of like there's not a lot of extra stuff in it. So that's definitely appears to be part of it. The other one is the context in which you're drinking it. Like when you drink red wine, there's also a decent amount of sugar in there. So if you drink a whole bottle of red wine, you're also drinking quite a bit of sugar with the alcohol. When you consume like a rum and coke, you're also drinking a lot of sugar. Like if you consume a vodka soda, it's a little bit different too. And so I think it's like all of those contexts put together.
Yeah. That's a good point. It's the other ingredients to me is the one that makes sense, that those other components would make you feel a certain way. So that's a great question though, Holly. And yes, if you have, you can ask any other questions that you might have. That goes for anyone watching. We're definitely able to field questions as they're coming in. So a few things left to discuss, and I want to talk about avoiding the feelings of guilt people have. This comes with like other foods too. This isn't just alcohol, but it does come up with alcohol, especially because and I can't tell you how many times I've had people ask who like they want to come on and get a coach. They want to do coaching, but they freely admit, hey, listen, I just want you to know I go out on the weekends. I like to have drinks. I don't want to give that up. Like it's concern, right? So like people ask, is this going to be a problem? And so one of the things that they end up going up, excuse me, I think I have a kind of a head cold. So if I sound ridiculous, that's why. But people go out with their friends. And when they have a coach, they'll have these discussions with their coach about, okay, how do I handle this? We can talk about how to track it. That's the easy part, but it's the mindset around it too, right? Like it's the, you know, how do I not feel guilty about this? How do I fit this into my life? And how do I not, like, because it is easy to go overboard. You sort of alluded to that earlier, right? If you have a couple drinks, your inhibitions are lowered, and maybe you have that third drink or that fourth drink and so on and so forth. So part of this is also, how do I avoid this from spiraling out of control? And so just kind of diving into, I suppose, to put that into a succinct question, it's how do I avoid the guilt or stigma that comes with that, and how do I avoid like just going off the rails and being sensible about this?
Well, I think if you take a fairly similar view of like food in general, like No one should feel guilty for eating cake on their birthday. Right? But you can't have cake for breakfast, lunch, and dinner every meal of every day. Alcohol feels fairly similar to that, right? It's a part of culture. Some people choose to drink. Some people choose not to drink. It's a highly personal decision. Everybody gets to make their own choice. If somebody says they're not drinking, great. If somebody says, hey, want to drink, great. So I don't think, like, just trying to remove the labels of guilt to that, I think, occurs along the same process lines of food and guilt and things related to that. In terms of, like, how do you fit it into your everyday life? I think it's just like you would fit anything else into your plan. Like, one, ask yourself, how much of a priority is this? Like, do I need to have a drink every single day for my life to be great? I don't know. Everybody's answer is going to be different, right? If the answer is yes, okay, well, then we've got to, like, engineer your personalized plan around that. If it's no, then it's like, okay, well, why not just be intentional about when you choose to have a drink? Like, the way I do it is there's some months where I'll maybe have like 1 to 2 drinks a week during that month. And then there's some months like I won't have a single drink at all. And it has to do with like the intentionality of like, oh, I'm choosing to have a glass of wine with this meal because of X, Y, and Z. Or I'm choosing to go out with some friends and have a couple beers for X, Y, and Z. But just like absentmindedly drinking a half a bottle of wine after work every day is like a much different thing than like being intentional about it and understanding that, like, where does it fall into your plan with like some level of intentionality. And so I think that's the first place to start the conversation is like, is this something that is important to you? If it is, when, where, how, and why?
And that's a great answer, by the way. And I think that's really, you made some really good points there. Holly just had another question. She says, I'll be the annoying person, which, by the way, Holly, you're not annoying. I actually love these questions and I wish people would ask more. So keep going. If this is you being annoying, keep being annoying. I'll be the annoying person per usual, asking only because I used to believe this and I still see it in the Facebook group all the time. Does alcohol really stop fat burning for 72 hours after consumption? We alluded to this earlier, but I'll let you kind of piggyback off that again, Brad.
It depends on how much you've had to drink. If you've had like a normal amount, like a couple drinks, most of the alcohol is processed out of your body within 10 to 12 hours. Now, if you continue to drink for 72 hours, yes. Or if you were to get your blood alcohol so high, like you have to be hospitalized, then it's probably going to be in there and having some small effect. But like having a glass or two of wine is not going to reduce fat oxidation for 72 hours. In fact, like here's some data from some time course studies where they infuse people with ethanol, like IV infusion, and looked at blood alcohol content. And basically by about hour six and a half, it was down to zero. So that means any effect it's having in the liver is pretty much gone by then.
So this brings up a question for me because we talk about like one way to avoid getting not drunk, but like to like avoid, I guess. Yeah. Avoid getting there as quickly is to drink with while you're eating. Right. So food, but if alcohol, if the food absorbs the alcohol or whatever it's doing, you're still metabolizing the food. So wouldn't you still metabolize the alcohol? Or is it really just more of a, you would, but it's more drawn out over time as opposed to just an acute, like a bunch of alcohol at once by itself?
Yeah. So the primary way that food prevents blood alcohol levels from reaching the highest level is it basically smooths out the spike in alcohol. So if you're consuming 20 grams right. of alcohol by itself, you're going to get all 20 grams at once. Well, within like a half an hour, if you consume it with a big meal, you're going to get it over an hour and a half, 2-3 hours. So it's right. not, it's, you're not going to feel it as much. The overall exposure of your body to the alcohol is going to be relatively similar.
Yeah. Okay.
You dig?
Yes, I do. We should open it up to, we do have some viewers. So, hey, if anyone wants to join Holly and ask questions, now is the time. Otherwise, Bradley, if you're good with spending the next few minutes here, I had ChatGPT come up with some more questions if
Oh,
you'd
God.
like to see if you're if
Sure.
you can get these right. What color is a traditional Negroni cocktail?
Ooh. I had one of these not that long ago. It's
You're not
like
looking it up, are you?
a
No cheating. No cheating.
No, it's sort of like a reddish orangish brown.
This says deep red. So there you
Okay,
go.
yeah, a reddish orangish brown.
Which actor famously promoted a brand of tequila he co-founded called Casamigos?
Is that Matthew McConaughey?
That was one of the multiple choice answers, but it's not. Do you want to take one more stab at it?
I know it's not The
He's
Rock because his
older
was
than he's.
Tremana.
Yep. Now this guy's older than McConaughey.
Is it, gosh, did he play James Bond?
He did not.
Okay, I don't know.
It's George Clooney.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
Wouldn't have got that one.
I'm glad I was able to finally stump you. What spirit is traditionally used in a Moscow mule? Never heard of a Moscow mule?
It is vodka. It's
Yes, it is
vodka and
vodka.
ginger beer and lime.
What cocktail is made with gin, vermouth, and an olive or lemon twist?
Well, a martini, but
Assume way too easy, way
we
too
make
easy.
martinis in our house with vodka and olive juice.
Okay. What fruit is used to produce Calvados, a French brandy?
Is it not grapes?
It's apples.
Ugh. Apple-based booze is tastes terrible.
I've never had it, but
Eh.
let's see. That's too easy. Like some of these questions, like which alcoholic beverage is typically aged in charred oak barrels? Gee, I don't know.
Two of them. Well, three
What?
of them, technically. You can have whiskey, you can have
Whiskey,
scotch, or
scotch, or
you can
bourbon.
have wine.
Well, yeah, I guess, yeah. What is the main difference? Speaking of bourbon, what is the main difference between scotch and bourbon?
Scotch is made in Scotland, bourbon is made in Bourbon County,
Yes.
Kentucky.
Too easy. These are too easy. I gotta have ChatGPT do better. Which type of wine is typically the sweetest?
Port.
That actually probably is correct. The choices were Pinot Noir, Riesling, Cabernet, or Merlot.
Riesling.
So a Riesling out of those ones. Yeah. We just got two more. Which cocktail contains gin, lemon juice, sugar, and soda water?
Ooh, well, technically, if you, it could be a French 75, but that's usually made with
This,
champagne and not soda water.
if you need a hint, I can give you one.
Sure.
This drink is the name of a person, a man's name.
Jim Collins.
Tom Collins.
Tom Collins.
His brother is Jim.
A Roy Rogers.
Oh, there is a drink called a Rob Roy. I don't remember
Oh,
what's in it,
a
but it's,
Shirley
yeah.
Temple.
Oh my God, that reminds. Oh my God. When I was 20, I was working at a restaurant
You ordered a Shirley
and.
Temple, didn't
No. I'll never forget
Yes, you
this.
did.
No, I was training. So I don't know if I was training the girl or if she was just brand new, but I remember when somebody at her table ordered a Shirley Temple and she asked for the ID. I remember being like, oh my God, it's so embarrassing. Like, I don't
Do
know.
you, have you ever
So.
watched the show Big Bang Theory?
I've seen parts of it, yes.
There's an episode where Sheldon goes to the Cheesecake Factory and sits at the bar with Penny where she's bartending. And he's like, "Can I have a rum and coke?" She's like, "You have to order something with booze." And he was like, "Well, what's the name for a, or no, he asked for like a Diet Coke with lime." And she's like, "Well, you have to order something with booze." And he's like, "What's the name for a rum and coke with lime?" She's like, "A Cuba Libre." He's like, "I'll have a virgin Cuba Libre, please."
That's pretty good. That's pretty good. Well, you got anything that you want to add here about?
Oh, one thing we should talk about is alcohol and disease risk.
Okay. Yes, I am the definite expert to speak on that. So let me go forward with that. And over to you, Brad.
So there's this interesting phenomenon in the research literature. If you look at just all-cause mortality, where you have a slightly lower risk of all-cause mortality if you have one drink a day than if you have zero drinks a day. But when you actually go into like all of the other data and you look at like cardiovascular disease, cancer risk, all of those things, it's actually a pretty like straight dose response curve. And so like if you look at the risk of cancer consuming alcohol, pretty much your risk of like a lot of the cancers that are related to the GI tract, like mouth cancer, esophageal cancer, stomach cancer, gallbladder, colorectal, basically every drink you have increases your risk of those diseases.
Wow.
Same thing with liver disease. Now, the question about like one of the things we hear is, oh, well, red wine is an exception because it's got antioxidants like resveratrol. But the amount of like red wine you'd have to consume to get a therapeutic dose of some of those things is so high that the alcohol effect would wash it out. And so, you know, when we think about why we actually see this J-shaped effect, my interpretation on the literature is when you like dig through it, what we actually see is the people who used to be heavy drinkers who then become abstainers and don't drink at all end up in the zero drink per day category. And so they've had maybe 20, 30 years of accumulated risk and then they don't drink at all. So that's why that group has an elevated risk. That's one of the hypotheses. But if you go from not drinking and you say, I'm going to drink a drink a day to live longer, the data doesn't really support that. So I think that's just an important caveat.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that because there's this misconception that like, take people in the Mediterranean, for example, like there's this idea that they drink a lot more red wine, it's heart healthy and they live longer. But I have to imagine that if there's any increase in longevity in the people over there versus here, it's probably not because of the wine, but just their overall lifestyle, like more than anything. Right.
Yeah.
But it gets attributed to the wine. So is there any, do you know if there's any like actual scientific backing to the idea that red wine is good for your heart?
My interpretation of it is I think it's that effect is massively overstated.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, it doesn't really make sense to me that it would because, again, it's, I mean, you're drinking alcohol and it's not like alcohol really isn't supposed to be part. You can't do anything with it. So, like, why would it be good for you? That's kind of my thought.
Anyway. I mean, now the other side of that argument is we do know that the body can't store caffeine, but people who drink coffee live longer and have a lower risk of Alzheimer's. Like that's very well proven.
From caffeine, you said?
Coffee consumption.
Oh, just coffee consumption. Is it
but
because of
you lose the effect coffee, if you don't drink your coffee like an adult. Like if you drink it like with a bunch of cream and sugar, you don't get the benefits.
Gosh, I wanted to see. I'm trying to find an image. Have you ever seen an image of caffeine like the structure of it? Not the like molecular structure, but I'm not gonna be able to find it. I don't think I'm, let's see. Yeah, I'm not gonna be able to. There's like the picture, and it could have been a made up picture, but like basically it was this image of
it. Did you put this into Grok and did it lie to you like it lied to you about the use of the radar to find the things on the pyramids?
I knew you were gonna go there.
Just so everybody knows, Dylan got kicked out of a meeting today for being a hater.
Brad just kicked me out of a meeting because he didn't want to hear what he knows deep down is true.
It's true. I did.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I did warn you. I said, if you're going to be a hater, I'm going to kick you out.
I will say, as an unrelated thought, that has nothing to do with this episode. I would love for that to be true about the pyramids, but there's no way it's true. But it's fun to speculate.
So you're not even going to say that there's a slight possibility it's true?
They're talking pillars of 600 meters. How would that have been done? Just how? Like, I just don't. Yeah, no, I don't think that's. I don't think there's any way.
You are the mayor of it. Haterville.
Yeah. Well, maybe next. Oh, that's what we should do next week, is just an episode on fringe theories. Because that would be very suitable for our guest.
We could do the episode on like crazy ideas in nutrition science. And you can just come up with a bunch of wild things to talk about.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Let me write that down. All right. Well, I don't have anything to add. So unless you do, and unless anyone has questions, and by the way, I can see that. Oh, thank you, Holly. Last second question here. That's perfect. How'd they build 140?
Yeah, Dylan.
Pyramids? Anyway, see,
so, you don't know ish.
I will just say this. Look up. I don't think we exactly know, but one of the best theories is the internal ramp hypothesis.
And wrong. There is, it's been proven wrong.
Nope. It has not been proven wrong.
Yes, it there has.
Is evidence. Nope. No, there is evidence for this. Holly, look it up.
Wouldn't work. It wouldn't work.
The internal ramp theory makes way more sense than a singular ramp leading up to the pyramid because
no,
like the physics, work. Like by the time. Don't listen to Brad. Look up the internal.
There's only theory. Two possible answers.
Well, one of them is aliens and
aliens or an ancient reptile species from a different planet, which is, I guess, also aliens. The Silurian hypothesis.
Well, there's also there are more, like, according to these, you know, conspiracy theorists, there are way more possibilities than that. I'm sure you've heard the one of like using sonic to levitate giant stones. I'm like, okay, if that were true, we could replicate that and prove it, but nobody's ever done that.
I also love that Jay's theory is giants.
Giants, yeah, yeah. Jay, it's not giants. Yes, it is. Prove it. No, it is. Okay. Holly's still going on about this. She
if
said,
anybody wants internal... to know what like the first 5 minutes of any meeting at Macros Inc. looks like, it's basically this us just it. Arguing about wild stuff. And then we get our
news started. Holly is still going on about it, though. She said maybe the internal ramp went down 600 meters. Holly, that's enough out of you. Okay. No more. You got to just trust
I think
me.
She's,
look it up.
I think she's right, to be honest with you.
I wish we could continue. I could actually chat about this stuff all day, but I think we'd probably lose viewership and a few brains.
I also have to get ready for the client only webinar that's at 11, so in a half hour, with one of the most interesting people you'll ever meet in your life.
Oh, is that today? Okay, I know what you're talking about.
Well, I've already pre-recorded it because her schedule is so crazy that I had to pre-record it, but it's going to be live so I can field questions. It's awesome.
Cool.
She was, so there was a recent NASA mission, and there was a female astronaut, and she was the runner-up to that spot. So she may be in one of the next missions. She's pretty awesome. She's pretty cool.
We should invite her on this podcast sometime.
I already had her on.
No, on this
but a separate one. No, this is for clients only.
Whatever.
There are some benefits you get from being a client at Macros Inc. besides just having awesome results.
All right, guys. Thank you for watching. I appreciate everyone's viewership and for putting up with our nonsense as usual. So we're going to duck out of here, but we will be back next week. And I think next week will be the time that we have a special guest who was supposed to be on today. Couldn't happen. Nope. So hopefully it happens next week.
He missed his shot. We'll see. That's it.
How do we know it's a he?
Because I know who you're talking anything. About.
Yeah, whatever. Okay. We're out of here, guys. Till next time. Thank you all for watching. Goodbye.